It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is a We Split with the Nationals edition of the Rico. Welcome in to episode 696 of Rico Bronya. The New York Mets win two and lose two against the Washington Nationals. A long four-game series. The first game, that crazy game one, we did an entire episode on. So if you want to hear us break down that crazy extra inning game, that's episode 695. We'll focus on the last three games. We'll focus on the state of the Mets and some overall thoughts on what happened in Washington, D.C. against the Nationals. You're Rico. I'm the man right now. Star of the series. You're net negative. Some of your emails. We'll have fun over the course of the next hour. A couple of just general views. Number one, the finale of this series was ugly and very frustrating. I am thrilled that they won. They needed that win. I think leaving DC with a split is acceptable, even if the way they lost some of these games was not acceptable. I think overall going 2-2 against Washington, not ideal, but not the end of the world. I think losing 3 out of 4 would have felt like the end of the world. I think a 3-game losing streak, especially with the way they won Monday and especially with the way they lost Tuesday, would have caused full-fledged panic if you aren't panicked already. I guess we've already panicked 15 times this season, so what's the difference? So Thursday's win was important. And sometimes it doesn't matter how it looks, it's that you get it. But as I'm watching this game, and we are doing this, Rico Bronya, a mere minutes after they concluded that game against the Nationals, some overall thoughts was the Mets did not play well in this game, nor did they play well in this series. And specifically in the finale of this series, when you have bases loaded, nobody out, and you're basically lucky to have it, an infield hit by Marcus Semien on a play that should have been challenged, but for whatever reason, the Nationals were asleep at the wheel, followed by a bunt by A.J. Ewing in which the second baseman, Nassim Nunez, covering first base, drops the ball, and you are handed bases loaded, nobody out, you got to score a run. As the Mets and the Met bullpen, which did an incredible job, are nursing a 2-1 lead, you've got to score a freaking run. They didn't. So the lack of clutch hitting in game four, the horrific defense, especially in game two of this series and really throughout this series, it's almost like their defense, while not as pathetic as the Nationals, they played down to the Nationals. And the Met defense this season has not been bad. I know at times we've ridiculed it, and maybe at times there's been the, oh, run prevention, let's mock David Stearns. But overall, there was some shoddy defense in this series. And kind of similar to the Yankee series, and I guess this is a good thing, because when you win games, sometimes it doesn't matter how you do it. It's just get the wins. The Mets are not playing great baseball. They weren't playing great baseball against the Yankees. They weren't playing great baseball for weeks, even during this stretch of time where more wins are coming. But hey, if you can escape with victories while you're not playing great, it's almost like you're biding time until you do play great. So that was overall thought number one. Overall thought number two, before we get into the specifics, I'm kind of frustrated by the way they're not playing Nick Morabito. They make the decision before game two of this series to DFA Austin Slater and call up Nick Morabito, a guy we've talked a lot about on the Rico, a guy I suggested even before A.J. Ewing was called up would have been the young guy to call up. And even recently, we talked about how the DH slash whoever's playing left field when Soto's DHing spot is a black hole on this team, whether it's MJ Melendez who has cooled off or it's Austin Slater. And so an infusion of youth would be helpful. Ryan Clifford's probably not ready to be that guy, but Nick Morabito has performed at AAA. He's a good defender. He's really athletic. So we mentioned him as a guy that made sense. And in order to play him, you would just have to DH Juan Soto a lot more, or even pick a day or two where Carson Bench DHs. So when the Mets made the decision on Tuesday to call up Nick Morabito, I was excited. It was something we had hoped for. And yes, his first game, which is the first game I want to start with, was not exactly an easy major league debut. He was right in the middle of it. But despite that, I want to see the kid play. Especially when the other options, the other guys that are playing essentially over Nick Morabito is Tyrone Taylor and MJ Melendez. So I'm a little disappointed that as of right now, and we'll see if it changes over the series in Miami, and then when they come home to face Cincinnati, I'm kind of disappointed that Nick Morabito's not really getting a chance to play. But overall, before we get into the specifics of this, of the games and the series in general, I look at this four-game split against the Nationals, and I say, it isn't a disaster. It's not the end of the world. It's not the momentum that we're hoping to build off of winning two out of three against the Yankees. It's like, I would almost say, borderline acceptable. Now, eventually, this team needs to make their move, and right now, it's six games under 500. They go to Miami in the same boat they were after the series win against the Yankees. And so we'll gear up and hoping that maybe the run begins now. But I think what they were at least able to do in winning the finale of this series, and even the way they won the opener of this series, which was not easy, the 12-inning classic that we did a whole episode on, is they were able to survive. Now, I want to get to game two of this series because game two of this National Series, I think is the only game we will remember from this series. And what I mean by that is, even if you're like me who watches 162, you're one of the psychos who are hanging out on a live Rico Bronya before Nick playoff game or listening on your Memorial Day Friday drive, because I assume these are some of the episodes where the diehards are listening, not the casuals. That's my assumption. We get some casuals checking in on the Rico. This is like a nitty gritty diehard Rico. That's how I view this one. But for the diehards, 162 games run together, which is why I like to write down the great win and the horrible loss as it happens. So then when the offseason occurs and we do a whole podcast talking about bad losses or great wins, I don't have to try to remember it. I have it written down. But there are certain games that you're just going to remember. Like, for example, opening day. Now, opening day is usually pretty easy because it's opening day, but chasing Paul Skenes in the first inning, you will remember that game. Devin Williams imploding against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley Field, boom, that's a game you remember. The comeback against the Yankees, you remember that game. But there's a lot of games, even if in the moment they suck, you're going to forget about. I look at this series against the Nationals, no matter where this season goes, whether it's a continued disaster or it turns around and shockingly we're all wrong and the Mets are good and they make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. I don't think anything about this series will be remembered except for the garbage we saw on Tuesday. Now, I admit I've been made fun of for this. I don't really care because I am me, and you can make fun of me as much as you want. I'm still going to be me. I scored game two of this series at Madison Square Garden. I took it almost as like a geek badge of honor that I would sit there in the first half of Knicks Cleveland with my tablet and score the game next to my dear buddy Big Mac, who does a great Yankee podcast called Come Get Some. No, that's Go Get Him. I think I just confused a Craig Carton slogan with Big Mac's podcast. Go get him. So I'm watching this game at Madison Square Garden, which means I'm not hearing anything. I'm visualizing it. And the tone of this game was set so beautifully because after the Nationals gifted Carson Bench an infield hit, Bo Bichette hits a two-run home run. And I'm at Madison Square Garden. It's like 7:45. I started a few minutes on DVR. It was a rain delay. And I'm like, yeah, I'm making noises. I'm thinking, hey, I'm at an arena. Who cares? I can make noises. That Bo Bichette two-run home run was important on so many levels because the night before, Bo Bichette had a three-hit game, but the last hit was against a position player. And he also got picked off in the game. It was a good Monday night for Bo Bichette, but now you need to see him build off of it. And him hitting a first-inning two-run home run against Foster Griffin, awesome sign. They tack on another run on a Marcus Semien sacrifice fly. Tremendous. And they have an early 3-0 lead. And then Bo Bichette again in the second inning hits a two-run home run. And I made the assumption, 5-0, top of the second inning, Nolan McLain on the mound. I was like, wow, we're off and running. We really are putting together a stretch of baseball that we as Met fans can be proud of. You win two out of three against the Yankees, specifically the last two. You beat the Nationals in a wild one on Monday. I am going to admit to you, and maybe it's being out of my element, sitting at on the bridge at Madison Square Garden scoring a Met game, which when you say it out loud, yes, it's weird. I admit that. I thought this is going to be easy. This is going to be a fourth straight win. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't mind being wrong. Maybe the Mets are about to go on a run. And I don't want to sit here and just bash Nolan McLain, because we need to remind ourselves he's a young pitcher. He is a man who has made 18 major league starts. It's less than a full season at the major league level. And while he got on Team USA in the WBC, and we all love him, and we think he's got ace qualities, and he still does, I don't want to kill him, but that was an unacceptable performance by Nolan McLain. I think I couched that okay, right? Love him, still believe in him, have to remind ourselves this is not easy. Think back to any rookie pitcher. They usually just don't make it look easy. But when you have a 5-0 lead and you're Nolan McLain, you can't give it all right back in the second and third inning. And before we bash Nick Morabito and Tyrone Taylor for the Inside the Park Grand Slam, let me remind you how the Inside the Park Grand Slam was even set up. There's two outs and nobody on in the second inning, and he gives up a first pitch double to Yorbit Vivas. Okay. Happens. He's a ball player. I was going to say good. He's not good, but he's okay. Major leaguer, it happens. He's ahead of Drew Millis, the catcher, 0-2, and he hits him. And I say this a few times when talking about certain sequences, but I'll say it here. Can't happen. Ahead of Millis, 0-2, you can't hit him. You can't have two outs, nobody on, and all of a sudden it turn in to two on, two out. And then Nassim Nunez hits a ground ball for an infield hit, and boom, you have two outs and nobody on. You're facing 7, 8, and 9. All three guys get on base. Some of it's bad luck. Some of it's bad pitching. Some of it's maybe Nolan McLain's tipping his pitches. And now you face James Wood with a chance to change the trajectory of the game. And that's what that at-bat was. I think I even said it out loud to Big Mac. I said, all right, it's the second inning. This is either going to be a baseball game. James Wood rips one up the alley. It's a baseball game. Even a base hit up the middle makes it 5-2. We have a game. Or Nolan McLain very early on can calm this down. And first pitch, which I guess goes along the lines of thinking that maybe Nolan McLain was tipping his pitches, which is possible. James Wood hits that rip job to left center field. Now, who am I going to rip on the rip job? Nick Morabito in the 2 innings of major league action showed you very quickly he can defend. Because in the first inning, he made that great catch on the line drive against Jose Tenya. So you already saw him make a good play. And by even getting to this baseball, Morabito showed you his athleticism and he showed you his potential defensively. When you get a glove on it, you got to make the play. And that's why I'm like, I want to call it fairly. I don't want to bash him. It's his second major league inning. And I thought he showed great athleticism in the first 2 innings by making the catch in the first inning and by even getting to that baseball. But the ball hit the heel of his glove. At that point, you've got to catch it. And once he doesn't, I still don't know what Tyrone Taylor was doing. Now, at that point, that's a one-run difference. Because if Taylor backs it up or plays it well, 3 runs are scoring. I don't think anything's changing the fact that Nassim Nunez, who can fly, is scoring from first base. That's a 3-run triple, even if Tyrone Taylor backs it up. But he doesn't, and it turns into an inside the park home run, and that 4th run matters. But right then and there, the game changed. But the game didn't change to the point where Nolan McLain had blown it. He still has a 5-4 lead. Now, I did have this dirty feeling in my mind that the Mets scoring 5 runs in the first 2 innings, 4 of which driven in by Bo Bichette, I did have this sneaky feeling that the offense was going to go to sleep, that that was going to be it. Thank you, offense. You've done enough. We won't see you again. And I basically turned out to be right, because outside of a Juan Solo home run in the 7th inning, we didn't see any more Met offense. But in the 3rd inning, okay, shutdown inning for Nolan McLain. First pitch, Jose Tenya hits a home run, and the game is tied. And then it became just such a struggle for McLain. He walked C.J. Abrams, another first pitch base hit, which he gave up a bunch of in this game, which certainly leads to the belief that maybe he was tipping his pitches. And then Nick Morabito, and I don't rip him for this, makes that great catch jumping into the stands that allows a run to score because there was a runner on third base. Why was there a runner on third base? Because Luis Torrens can't freaking catch the ball at the plate. I don't know what happened to Luis Torrens in this game. This was a bad Torrens game. You have the pass ball in the third inning on a pitch that's almost a strike. I forgot if it was called a strike or not. I don't think it was, but it was off of his glove, and it's a play you've got to make. And then, of course, an inning later, as Nolan McClain is really trying to get through this disaster outing, because rightfully so, Mendy's saying, can you give me innings, please? Luis Torrens is dropping a throw to the plate thrown by Bo Bichette. So when I talked about the ugliness of the defense, I've just hit on four different things, and that was all on Tuesday. Morabito getting to a baseball and having it go off the palm of his glove. Tyrone Taylor being clueless and not being able to back him up and then just standing there for whatever reason until Morabito goes to chase the ball. The Torrens pass ball, which led to one of those runs being unearned. And then, of course, you've got Marcus Semien, who's been very sure-handed defensively. I didn't even get to that. See, there's so much bad defense, you just run out of room. He fields what should be an inning-ending double play, bobbles it, and then throws it away. He should have gotten two errors on that play. The official score was nice. Should have been two errors. One, allowing the runner to get the second on the bobble, and then going to third based on the garbage throw that he made. So I think I've lost count on the bad defense just in that two-inning sequence. We got the Morabito, we got the Taylor, we got the Torrens fastball, we got the Marcus Semien boot job and bad throw, and then, yes, the play at the plate, Luis Torrens just flat-out drops it. I mean, that was as bad a defensive sequence as you'll ever see.
Ev, I know you said it in the beginning of the podcast that, you know, even though it looks like they've played bad defense, really on paper they haven't. Are we sure about that? Because I feel like every game they're playing crappy. You said it, dude. They're winning games, but don't even look good.
Well, you were talking about the whole season, or are we talking about this series against Washington?
Well, I feel like every series is the same. They always play bad baseball, and they happen to win a couple games here and there.
Well, no, okay, so that's different. I don't think they've played good baseball overall, but that's more than just defense. There's a lot of feedback, so I appreciate you jumping in, but you got to shut the mic off and then go on and off. I appreciate that. Before I get like 10 emails of people complaining, saying, Hoffman's sound is terrible. No, but I appreciate what you said, because I do want to retort it a little bit, because you're kind of right. The Mets have not played well this season. There's a reason why they're six games under 500. And yes, during the sequence of games that they're winning has not been perfect. I think defensively, they've probably been better overall than we've said, or most fans have said. And I think a lot of it is that David Stearns uses the buzzword run prevention. And so anytime there's a miscue defensively, it's always like run prevention. But I think if you go around the diamond, their defense at third base, whether it was Bichette's adjustment or now Beatty at third base, has been tremendous. Bichette at shortstop has been eh. Semien has been really good defensively at second base. What I'm talking about from the fourth inning on Tuesday was a horrific inning, but like overall, has he been good defensively? Yeah. Same with Torrens. Like Torrens has his weird moments, which I'm trying to figure out. We talked about this like very briefly on Evan and Tiki, and even throw out the idea of the contract affecting him, which I can't see. I think it's that when a backup catcher plays all the time, they get exposed. And we all like Luis Torrens, but we like him as a backup. And now he's being asked to play every single day. But I think their outfield defense, now that Robert Jr. isn't playing, has mostly been good. I think overall, I mean, it's tough to grade it, but I don't think their defense has been bad. Their defense was bad in this series. Their defense was bad on Tuesday. And it felt, even though the Mets scored those five runs in the first two innings, you could just sense after they didn't score in the third inning that their offense was done for the day. And so once the Nationals take the lead on the pass ball and the sacrifice fly, and then they tack on two more unearned runs in the fourth inning on the horrible defense we talked about, this game was 9-5 in the fourth inning, and it felt over. It felt over. It reminded me of that game I told you, there's certain games you just remember for whatever reason. I think it was against Atlanta last summer where the Mets scored a bunch of runs early, had a big lead. I was with my wife at this game. And I even made the comment, great, we're going to have a laugher. And then they imploded and gave up like 9 runs in the last two innings. The next two innings. And it turned into a blowout the other way. And that's what happened. And this game, in a lot of ways, this loss, because everything I just described, the offense goes to sleep after 5 runs in the first two innings. Nolan McLean isn't good, but he's certainly not helped out by his defense, which was horrendous. And all of a sudden, a 5-0 lead turns into a 9-5 deficit. This felt, and hopefully it's not the case, because there's only been 2 games since, but this loss kind of felt like the loss that's just going to stop any hope that we had. That was the thought that was going through my mind. And again, maybe it's my environment. I'm at Madison Square Garden. I'm watching the Knicks complete a ridiculous comeback against Cleveland. But I did have that thought. I was going to do a Rico that night if I wasn't at the Garden, because that was like the dark thoughts I had after a game like this, that this is going to be the freaking game. This is the June 13th. This is the game you look back on and say, yeah, it was all turning around, and then that happened. Now, the thing about baseball is I don't know the future. I don't know what's going to happen the next day or the day after that. It's just this dirty feeling you have, because the headline to me is you have a 5-0 lead. You have your best pitcher on the mound, and everybody, I mean, it is a top-to-bottom failure. Everybody fails. I would say Bo Bichette's the one guy you exonerate, but even in the 7th inning, he came up, leadoff man on base, chance to put together a little bit of a rally, and he bounces into a double play. So even Bo Bichette wasn't perfect in this game. I'm not concerned about Nolan McLean. I actually commend him slightly for being able to fight through it and at least give the Mets innings. Remember, the Met bullpen was in such shambles. I said this on the episode 695, that Nolan McLean needed to go deep into the game. We all knew that going in. And after he gives up the 4 in the 2nd, the 3 in the 3rd, the 2 in the 4th, his pitch count was 75 through 4. So it was low enough that Mendy said, I'm not going to waste my bullpen. Find a way to get me more innings. And the mini positive is 1-2-3-5th. Clean 6th, helped out by a caught stealing. Like, he ended up going 5 2/3 innings. So he didn't complete the 6th inning, but he got into the 6th inning. It was at least like a minor victory, like a tiny victory that you take. And so fortunately, other than Daniel Duarte, and I still can't get this guy's name. I got a lot of crap from people. People were very upset that I am not pronouncing this guy's name right, because it's disrespectful, and it's true. I don't want to be disrespectful to his family. For whatever reason, I now have a mental block on saying his name. Duarte. But he got sent down. I was right. He got his 7 outs. He pitched really well, and now he's gone. I mean, he'll probably be back. He'll be on the Syracuse shuttle before you know it. Once David Stearns wakes up and gets rid of Craig Kimbrel and realizes it. But Duarte did a good job. I give him credit. He really did a good job. He came in, got the last out in the 6th inning, helped out by the Torrens caught stealing. 1-2-3-7th. Gave up an infield hit, but got through the 8th inning. And I thought what was really important was at least it saved and reset this bullpen. I know people don't want to hear that. They get annoyed, especially in close games when you don't use your best relievers. You have your top bullpen fresh for the next day, when you have a better chance to win, or at least in the case of the Mets, 2 days later, when they had a great chance to win. The game on Wednesday was one of those games where I, other than the offense, which you can get mad at, I wasn't mad at Zach Thornton. Zach Thornton is making his major league debut and is probably not ready. And you are seeing one of the issues that this team has right now. Their starting pitching depth has been tested. It's been exposed partially because of injuries like Clay Holmes, and then ineffectiveness. You had a lot of guys who were supposed to be, or we relied upon to be good. Kodai Senga was supposed to be good, and we could call him injured, but he was awful. David Peterson was supposed to be good until his starting game 4. He was being used as the bulk guy. Sean Manaea hasn't made a start yet, which is still kind of crazy. because his velocity is down, because he wasn't good in spring, and because out of the bullpen, he hasn't been awe-inspiring. So all of that combined with Jonah Tong's struggles in the minor leagues kind of led to the rush job of Zach Thornton. So he takes the mound. I don't know what to expect. I don't think any of us know what to expect, but I was angry losing Tuesday. I was accepting of losing Wednesday. Because again, the kid made two starts at AAA. Like, is he ready? Or is this similar to last year where desperation has caused this team to call guys up? And you could ask this question, and this is kind of the weird renaissance the Mets are going through right now. Would you rather a veteran? Would you rather them? I had a caller bring this up on Evan and Tiki. Would you rather them call the Rockies and just get Jose Quintana for a song and have him make a handful of starts? Or would you rather give the youth a shot? And where this season is going is that this is all about the youth. And it doesn't mean I'm accepting of a lost season. I'm not. I still want to win. I still hold out hope that they're going to prove us all wrong and go on a run. But this season has somehow transitioned from veteran, expensive team to expensive young team, mainly because a lot of that payroll is not playing. Luis Robert Jr. makes $20 million. He ain't walking through that door. Jorge Polanco makes $20 million, not walking through that door. Sean Manaea makes $25 million. He's a long reliever. Kodai Senga makes $15 million. I don't know when he's walking through the door. So sometimes you wonder, like, hey, how do they have such a high payroll? What am I looking at? I'm looking at a young, young team. Yeah, a lot of the guys who make a ton of money are not playing. And so this has become a youth movement with Benj made the team out of spring training. So I don't even want to include him, but Benj having a more prominent role being the leadoff hitter. AJ Ewing being called up. Zach Thornton now being called up. This is like, I don't want to say they're rebuilding, but they're doing two things at once, that's for sure. As far as the way Thornton pitched, the first inning felt frustrating and unlucky. He gets the first guy out, James Wood, not easy, gives up a blue base hit to Curtis Meade, and then, quite frankly, he struck out Andrés Chaparro, but Hayden Senger, who I don't know if he just doesn't have confidence in himself or what, wouldn't challenge pitches that were strikes in the at-bat and sequence to Chaparro. And considering the Mets overall stink on challenges, and they have wasted them in such weird moments, I couldn't understand why Hayden Senger was sitting back there not challenging pitches, especially in that Chaparro at-bat, that were clearly strikes. And so it turns into this long at-bat. It turns into a walk. And then C.J. Abrams hits a three-run home run. And it's like, damn, that's how we're going to start this game. We're going to start this game with a bloop hit, a walk that shouldn't have happened. And then, yes, Met killer now, C.J. Abrams, hits a three-run home run. And then you look at the second inning, and again, there's some unluck involved. He issues the walk to Nunez, and then Hayden Senger, as Nunez is trying to steal second base, throws the ball in the center field. Getting back to the bad Met defense we talked about. So instead of a runner on second, one out, the ninth place hitter being up, now it's a runner on third, less than two outs, and it gives Keibert Ruiz room to just poke one up the middle for an RBI single. I thought what Thornton did next was very impressive, though, because he got through the second inning. He pitched a 1-2-3 third. He pitched a 1-2-3 fourth. So very modestly, he retires eight in a row, gets into the fifth inning, and that's when Carlos Mendoza said, 80 pitches, four and a third innings, I'm going to trust my bullpen. I didn't disagree with that, because I think with a runner on second and one out in the fifth inning, it's not about pitch count. It's about third time around the batting order. Austin Warren's been really good, so there's a level of trust for him. Let's call it a day with Zach Thornton. And we do have to remind ourselves that the Nationals have scored more runs than any team in the National League. So this is not your Papa's Washington Nationals. This is not a limp D offense, as we like to say. What do I think of Zach Thornton's major league debut? I mean, it wasn't horrible. There was some unluck involved. Would I give him another start? Probably. And I would see, can he build on this? Because the options are not great. Not to jump ahead, but we have certainly gotten word that Jonah Tong is going to be called up and is going to, I guess, relieve this rotation slightly by pushing everybody back a day. And I get why they're doing that, considering the bulk of games that they're involved in and giving everybody an extra day. There's nothing wrong with that. But Jonah Tong isn't ready. Jonah Tong has struggled at the minor league level. This isn't a one-off for him. So I guess from that standpoint, it's not really a big deal, because no matter what he does, he likely goes back to AAA to try to continue and develop. Could you give Sean Manaea a spot start? I guess you can, but it shows the lack of confidence they have in him. If I would have told anybody listening to the Rico in late March that Zach Thornton, Jonah Tong, who else? I got to think about all the guys that have made starts. All the guys that I'm probably forgetting in my brain right now. They're all going to make starts for the New York Mets before Sean Manaea. And oh, by the way, Sean Manaea's not hurt. Now, if he was hurt, you'd understand it. But let me see all the guys that have made starts for the New York Mets this season. We have 9 guys. We have Zach Thornton. We have Tobias Myers and Waskar Brazoban in opener roles. David Peterson, no surprise. Christian Scott, a little bit of a surprise now in the rotation. Kodai Senga, Clay Holmes, Freddie Peralta, Nolan McClain. And one guy who hasn't made a start yet is Sean Manaea, and he's healthy. That would have been stunning if I would have told you that. But that's a part of the concern I have moving forward, is this rotation is not great. You have confidence in McClain bouncing back. You have confidence in Freddie Peralta. Christian Scott, I think, has shown a lot of potential. And so I do want to run him out there every 5 days and see what I got. And we'll get to David Peterson's outing, but you're talking about 60% of the rotation being a major question. And there's no easy answer. And there's no one walking through that door. Clay Holmes isn't going to be back till August. It's such a big blow, the injury to Clay Holmes. We knew it at the time, but you feel it even more now a couple of days later as you put the pieces back together. And Kodai Senga, he's got to get over the back issue, go to the minor leagues, and pitch well. So overall, 4 1/3 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs from Zach Thornton. Not great, not awful. And then Austin Warren really struggled. I mean, Austin Warren came in and didn't do a good job. He got bailed out when he gave up the base hit to Garcia. And Carson Benn showed off the gun by throwing out Ruiz at the plate. But then he ran into trouble in the 6th inning and allowed a game that was close, even if none of us believed the Met offense was going to come back. But a 4-2 game got the 6-2. They get the 2 runs from Soto in the 8th inning to make it 6-4. And there's Craig Kimbrell pitching a parts of a 3rd inning of work. And he gives up a home run to Jacob Young. 2 things about that decision, and then we'll get to the offense. I get what Mendy's doing. It goes back to what I said earlier about using Durante the day before. He's trying to save his bullpen in a game he's likely not going to win. At 6-4 in the bottom of the 8th inning, as much as I want to win, you want to win, we all want to win, they're likely not coming back and winning that game. And so the thought is, let me get as many outs as I can from guys who aren't going to affect my bullpen the very next day. So I get going to Craig Kimbrell. I think the problem was he pressed his luck too much, because Kimbrell got the last 2 outs of the 6th inning, got 3 outs in the 7th inning. You are now asking him in the 8th inning to pitch a 3rd different inning? So Tobias Myers was the guy on my mind. Just go to Myers, or I don't think Manaea would have been available, so I can't even include him, but go to somebody else just because it feels like you're pressing your luck. And shockingly, Kimbrell got the first 2 outs, but then gives up the double to Daylan Lyle and gives up the home run to Jacob Young. And at that point, shut the TV off. Any notion of a comeback is dead and gone. But again, it goes back to the offense. Zach Littell has had a terrible season this year. He's given up 1 million home runs. 5 innings, 2 runs from Zach Littell. You have to do better than that. And there were a couple of missed opportunities in the 2nd inning after the RBI single by Brett Beatty. You had a chance to put a rally together, and Hayden Senger struck out very meekly with 2 on and 2 out. Soto hits the solo home run, which it's amazing how many solo home runs he hits, but when he comes up with nobody on base, what the hell do you want him to do? That's the other aspect of it. Juan Soto, at least in Wednesday's game, came up 4 times. Nobody on base, flied out. Great play. Thought I was going to get out, but Dylan Cruz made a great catch. Solo home run, led off the sixth, foul pop up, came on with one on and two out in the eighth, hits a two-run bomb. So you need guys on base. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to hit solo home runs if you come up a lot with nobody on base. But that was the Met offense. The Met offense was Juan Soto. His solo home run in the third, his two-run bomb in the eighth inning. You could tell, though, in this game and in this series how locked in Soto is. You just need a little bit more luck because he should have had three home runs in that game. Dylan Cruz made a great leaping catch, and I think the win may have contributed to knocking that one down, too. So that loss on Wednesday was, I don't want to say acceptable, but it's understandable, at least the Zach Thornton part. And then the I'm not using my best reliever part. And hey, Austin Warren finally had a bad day. The frustrating part of Wednesday was the offense. Because going back to Tuesday night, they score five runs in the first two innings. In the next seven innings, they score one run. And then if you combine that with the next nine innings where they scored four runs, you're talking about, let me do the math, five runs in 16 innings. Not very good. And again, not against great pitching. Zach Littell had a six ERA. And the Mets can't hit him. And that's what led to Thursday being so important. I got why they started David Peterson as opposed to using him as a bulk guy. It's about the lineup. A part of why Peterson is a weapon as the bulk guy is so that you can manipulate when you use him against what part of the batting order. Well, the Nationals' best hitter is James Wood. He leads off. He's a lefty. And so your better matchup, if Waskar Brazoban's going to start, is not Waskar Brazoban facing James Wood. It would be David Peterson facing James Wood. So I think when you look at the Nationals and how left-handed they are, C.J. Abrams as the cleanup hitter, it just made sense to start him. Now, that doesn't mean in his next start or his next performance, he's now just a starter. I think depending on the lineup that you're facing, depending on the team that you're facing, you can manipulate that. But this made a lot of sense. Even think about when Waskar Brazoban came into the game. So it was reversal because David Peterson ended up going five innings. And when Brazoban came in, he was facing two righties, Dylan Cruz, Dalen Lyle, lefty, and Jacob Young, a righty. So it's all about finding the right matchups, which is why David Peterson as a bulk guy has worked. And Brazoban at times as the opener has worked. So flipping them for this game made complete sense. I got to commend David Peterson. I will couch it by telling you, I don't believe now in David Peterson. This isn't like a magical performance where now, oh, we're all good. David Peterson's back. First half all-star, David Peterson's back. We got nothing to worry about. I am not suggesting that, but I'm responding to the way he pitched on Thursday. And considering what he did in the first inning, and not just the first inning, but we'll start there. This was impressive by him. He gets the first two outs of the game by barely breaking a sweat. And then has that long at-bat and sequence against Chaparro where he draws a walk, walks C.J. Abrams, walks Dylan Cruz, and in the bottom of the first inning, this game is hanging by a thread. We just talked about what the Met offense has done recently. There's certainly no confidence they're putting up any kind of crooked number, and David Peterson has just walked the bases loaded with two outs. His sequence against Dalen Lyle saved him. Struck him out, got through the first inning. He threw 28 pitches after throwing. The craziest stat is he threw 28 pitches. He threw four to get the first two outs. So it took him 24 pitches to get through the four batters he faced to get that last out without allowing a run. And then even in the second inning, he gives up a leadoff ground ball to shortstop that Bo Bichette just boots. And I think it should have been a base hit. It was scored an error, but it should have been a base hit because I think Jacob Young is so fast that once Bo Bichette didn't charge on it, I think Young was going to beat it out. Now, we'll never know that because Bo Bichette bobbled it, but maybe that was in the back of his mind, which is why he bobbled it. But leadoff error, and he still calmly is able to get through it, helped out by a caught stealing that was weird because with two on and two out, you got the double steal with Nassim Nunez and Keibert Ruiz. Ruiz is slow, and he's the one going to second base. And Torrens knew right away, as he saw Nunez trying to steal third, I'm going to go the long way. I'll go to second, and I'll throw out the catcher who's trying to steal second base. So a little bit of luck there, but then a 1-2-3 third, a good fourth inning. He runs into trouble in the fifth. That was his Waterloo. Gets to the fifth inning. He's nursing this 2-0 lead. Gives up the leadoff hit to Ruiz. Gives up the double to James Wood. At second and third, nobody out. Bottom of the fifth inning with a 2-0 lead. I'll admit, I was just hoping he could get through the fifth inning. If the game's tied, it's disappointing, but it's not a disaster. 2-1, I'd throw a party. 2-0, I mean, 2-0 was never going to happen. 2-0, I'll fall out of my chair. And again, David Peterson, this is where I'm giving him credit, at least for this performance, made the big pitches when he needed to. Struck out Curtis Mead, got Chaparro to ground out. Unfortunately, infield was back, so it led to a run. And then, this is where I guess I shouldn't give credit to David Peterson. He got saved by Mark Vientos. So for all the bad defense that we saw in this series, and we saw a lot of it, Mark Vientos made maybe his best defensive play of the season, and maybe his most important, because C.J. Abrams had a line drive that should have gone in the right field corner. It should have tied the game, and Vientos made a headlong dive. The ball was behind him, and he makes the play and gets Abrams out at first base unassisted. An incredibly clutch play defensively by Mark Vientos, which made up for the fact that he had a limp D 0-for-4. But he made the defensive play of the game, and it turns Peterson's outing from blah to, oh, I'll take it. 5 innings, 1 run. When you look at a pitching line without any context, 5 innings, 1 run, 90 pitches, whatever he ended up throwing, it's like, oh, great. David did a great job, but there was a lot of moments that we went through that impacted it. The big pitch to get out of bases loaded, and of course, the great defense of Mark Vientos, because that play saved him. The bullpen, this is why you have a fresh bullpen. This is why, not that you punt games, I hate that word, but you manage differently the night before. You manage to Craig Kimbrell trying to pitch into a third inning. You do that so Brazoban, Rayleigh, Weaver, and Williams can be available. And that is the best of the Met bullpen. And to all of their credits, they did the job. They had no margin for error because of the Met offense and their inability to get a big hit. But Brazoban had an easy 1-2-3 inning. Rayleigh had an easy 1-2-3 inning. Weaver gets around the 2-out walk. And then Devin Williams. My man, Devin Williams. I'm joking. I mean, he is my man now. He's all of our man now. But I've been very critical of Devin, haven't we all? He showed balls in this one. Because the pop-up to Daylen Lyle, where the wind was against the Mets. The wind hated the Mets in the final game of this series. Whether it's knocking down home runs like the Carson Bend shot with the bases loaded. I think there was a few others in this game. I'm trying to remember. The wind was crazy. To start the ninth inning, Daylen Lyle hits a pop-up to center field. Ewing takes his first step back. The ball keeps coming in and in and in. He's got to make a diving catch. Gary Cohn thinks he catches it. He doesn't catch it. The ball squirts loose. Runner on second, nobody out. And this is where Devin Williams in the past lets it implode. But right now, he is throwing the baseball so well that he's able to calmly get a ground out, even though that allowed the runner to go to third, get a massive strikeout of Jose Tena, and then got Keibert Ruiz to ground out. Master's work by Devin Williams. Masterful work. I think I left the full out. Masterful work by Devin Williams. And this was one of those games. We talked about it when he blew the game in Chicago. This was one of those games he couldn't afford to blow. This is an important one. Swing game, final game of a four-game series, difference between a split and losing a series. They needed that. That's a hell of a job by Devin Williams and a hell of a job by the Met bullpen. 4 innings, 1 hit. It was a blooper that should have been caught. 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. That's why they won this game. Because the bullpen and even the defense, right? Spent a lot of time ripping the defense so far in prior games of this series. The Mark Vientos diving play. That's what I mean by defense, because that was the play that I'm thinking of. There's no other defensive play. I'm trying to see if anything jumped out at me. As far as the offense is concerned, and I touched this at the beginning, you have opportunities to score runs. You have to take advantage of it. After Bo Bichette came through with the huge two-run single, and that was a big hit by Bo. He had a great series, a great, great series. More on Bo in a little bit when we talk about the Rico on the man right now, star of the series. That was very, very important, that second inning or that third inning. Melendez gets hit by a pitch. Torrens has that little cheapy infield hit. Benj rips a ball to left field, but hit too hard. Bases loaded. First pitch, Bo Bichette, two-run single up the middle. Much, much needed. But after that, you have two on and one out. And Juan Soto takes a pitch right down the middle. And Mark Vientos grounds out. You get a leadoff double by Brett Beatty in the fourth inning. Can you advance him, Marcus Semien? No, he strikes out. A.J. Ewing strikes out. Melendez flies out the right field. So after the Bo Bichette two-run single, the Mets in the next two innings have five opportunities with runners in scoring position, and they go 0 for 5. They put a little rally together in the seventh inning. They had short change because A.J. Ewing was thrown out trying to steal on really a great play by C.J. Abrams. They get a runner and scoring opportunity in the eighth inning after a Soto walk, stolen base, wild pitch. Vientos strikes out. And obviously the big one's the ninth inning. You have the bases loaded and nobody out. And MJ Melendez can't hit the ball. And Luis Torrens hits a soft line drive. Carson Benj just hitting a bad luck. He hit a ball that had a chance to be a grand slam, go 10 rows deep. Unfortunately, the wind knocked it down. And it was frustrating. Again, I'm thrilled day one. And it goes back to Devin Williams and this Met bullpen. But think about all those opportunities I just laid out. The Mets ended up finishing 2 for 12 with runners in scoring position and 0 for their last 10. So the good news is, I present to you good news, I present to you bad news. The bad news is, they are not playing like a good team. You watch this team. If you're honest, we are now 50 games through this season. They don't feel like a good team. They don't look like a good team. They don't have the pitching of a good team. They're not a good team. That's the bad news. The good news is there's 112 games left. And the good news is they were able to escape with two victories that they very easily could have lost. And they needed those wins, especially with the way they lost on Tuesday. So the season rolls on. 6 games under .500. 3 games against Miami. I'm not going to sit here and delusionally tell you that we got to sweep the Marlins because I have no evidence they're going to do that. Win a series. Win this series. Complete a winning road trip. Get it back to Citi Field at 5 games under .500. And I think there you start to continue to say, all right, still not a good team, but we're slowly trying to keep this season alive. You know, you can knock one out of the park even when the wind's blowing in, and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field and Fuji Apple, of course, white peach and lemon. We'll pick the Rico on the man right now, star of the series. We'll also pick the net negative, but let me open up that email and see what's going on. Hey, Joe Shane got an extension with the Giants. You see that one? Yeah. All right. Let's read some emails. Number one, Robert writes, is Morabito going to be another Mauricio? Call him up and not play him? What's the point of that? So I hope that's not the case. I think that what's possible, doesn't mean this is going to be the case, what's possible is that they just viewed Austin Slater as the right-handed bat off the bench as being less appealing than Nick Morabito. I think Nick Morabito should get a chance to play, but is it possible that the Mets view Nick Morabito as not an everyday player? So the reason I bring that up is we always talk about with a young player, you want to give them a chance to play every day. You want to see what they have. And if they can't play every day at the major league level, you play them every day at AAA, right? We've always heard that. David Stearns has talked about that. Okay. If the Mets view Nick Morabito as a fourth outfielder, because all prospects aren't meant to be superstars, some of them are viewed as, that's a good fourth outfielder at the major league level. Sometimes prospects turn into that. Sometimes you view them that way. If they view Nick Morabito as a fourth outfielder. Is it crazy, even as a young player, to treat him as a fourth outfielder? That's what I wonder about. I would play him, and I think it's easy to play him. If Juan Soto doesn't want to DH every day, then pick a day or two where Carson Benj DHs. And here's why that makes sense before anybody attacks me. And even AJ Ewing DHs or even Nick Morabito DHs. Here's why that makes sense. In the minor leagues, they have off days once a week. They are not playing 16 straight days at the minor league level. So instead of giving guys off days, which Carlos Mendoza's mentioned doing, like he's mentioned, hey, I got to give these guys off days because they don't play every day in the minor leagues. You're giving them a half an off day by DHing. If we are strictly saying I want our best defensive alignment out there, then the answer is Juan Soto DHs every day. But I think we also have to understand that Juan Soto at this point in his career probably wants to be out there. And there's some level of respect you need to offer. MJ Melendez, it's up, bro. Even Hoff knows. MJ Melendez and the magic he provided for the first few weeks of the season, it ain't there anymore. So the DH slash left fielder when Soto DHs for the time being should be Nick Morabito. I agree with you. He should get a run. The opportunity is clear. The only complication is who DHs. Tommy writes, Devin Williams was steady as a rock. That wind-induced double would have undone him a month ago. But what do we have to say? But what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. That's dramatic. The story of Devin Williams as a Met in 2026 is going to be a damn good one. Vincent writes, hi, Evan. Like you, I have my doubts about this team. However, winning a few series and seeing the young players come up from the minors have been exciting and uplifting. Without intent to be judgmental here, I did not agree with David DFA Stern's offseason moves and trades. Acquiring players with a history of injuries does not support the concept of run prevention. Instead, it could prevent the team from scoring runs. Not resigning Alonso, in my opinion, was a mistake and injustice to the organization and fan base. We don't have a legitimate first baseman. Hopefully, David Stearns has done some reflecting on this offseason moves that injured this team. Thanks again for the Rico Brugna. I appreciate the email. Let's go to Austin, who writes, bases loaded, nobody out, and you can't even get one insurance run. The wind gods gift the Nats a leadoff double. It feels like the Mets of April lose that game 10 out of 10 times. Not today. I'll always take a split of four on the road against NL East rivals. Fair enough. You are right that some of the bad luck, we've talked about the good luck the Mets have had. Like they had a lot of good luck in the Yankee series and you take it and you run with it. You're right. I mean, it's just that ninth inning was bad luck. A ball that should have gone 10 rows deep is a fly ball to right field, and then a wind-induced double for a guy in Devin Williams who in the past has let moments get to him. You're right. It felt a little bit different. Looking ahead to this Marlins series, right now, Freddy Peralta is scheduled to start the Friday game against Yuri Perez, so that'll be a right-hander. Max Meyer is going to start the Saturday game for Miami. That's another right-hander. That'll probably be the Jonathan game. And they haven't announced anybody yet for Sunday. So two more righties on the mound lead you to question, does Mendy play Morabito? I hope he does. I think the guy deserves a chance. Let's hand out the Rico on the man right now and the net negative. I think you've got... It's very tough to do the math on overall stats in a four-game series. I was unable to do it. But Carson Benj had one hit, three hits, and now we're at five, and then three more. So he had eight hits in this series. Though I almost feel like I don't want to count the base hits and the RBIs against Yorbit Vivas when he came into pitch. But I think the three guys that jump out at me, unless you want to include Devin Williams for his rock-solid save, but the guys that jump out at me are Carson Benj, Bo Bichette, and Juan Soto. But I think ultimately the man who deserves the Rico I'm the Man right now star of the series is indeed Bo Bichette. Because Juan Soto did cool off in the final game of this series, Bo Bichette supplied all the offense in game four of this series with his two-run single. He had a base hit right before the Soto home run in game three, but overall didn't do anything. That was the Juan Soto show. And remember in game two, he was the one that handed Nolan McClain the big lead with the two home runs and the four RBIs. And then if you go back to the opener of this series, he hits the home run in the seventh inning that gives the Mets an even bigger lead, gets a base hit in the 12th inning, which helped continue the rally after the Mets had briefly taken the lead. He did add the two-run double in the 13th inning, but again, it's like, or the 12th inning, I should say. But again, it's off Vivas. You almost don't want to include it. But Bo Bichette had a huge statistical week. Three home runs. How many RBIs? Let me count them up. And I'll include the one against Vivas. I guess I have to. 3 + 4 = 7. + 2 = 9. 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, impactful hits. I mean, Hoff, I don't know if you could talk right now. Stop the count. Like, we got to hand it to the man. He had won back-to-back net negatives. He's a 5-time net negative award winner this season. Bo Bichette, I don't even think it's close. You, Bo Bichette, are the man right now. And that was needed. That was needed for Bo, and that was needed for us. That was a really good offensive series for Bo Bichette. And the hope is he can build off of it. Honorable mention of Juan Soto. Honorable mention of Juan Soto, who I thought looked locked in mostly in this series. He had a bunch of home runs. He ended up hitting 3 home runs as well. How many RBIs did he have? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 RBIs. Not quite Bo Bichette, but good series for Soto. Good series for Benj. Great series for Bichette. Kudos to David Peterson, obviously, for the 5 innings. But yeah, Bo Bichette, for the first time this season, you are the man right now. The net negative. Oh, boy. I have somebody in mind. I have somebody I want to hand it to. I'm smiling only because I feel bad. Like, I don't want to hand the net negative to this guy. But I think the net negative is Nolan McClain. I just have to say it. It was a 5-0 lead, and it wasn't all his fault. I get it. Like, if Nick Morabito makes that catch, it's still 5-0 going into the next inning. Marcus Semien played bad defense. Luis Torrens played bad defense. I understand it. But I thought, as I mentioned earlier on in this pod, that that was such a horrible loss and so frustrating that... By the way, one other honorable mention for I'm the Man right now is Waskar Brazoban. Let me hand it to him. 2 scoreless innings or unearned runs in the extra inning game. Got the win in that game, but got 6 outs. Then he got 3 more outs in the finale. So he's not the man right now, but honorable mention of Waskar Brazoban, who's had a great year. I think Nolan McClain's an option. I'm trying to think who else. Marcus Semien, you want to throw Marcus Semien under the bus for his bad defense? He didn't really do much offensively in this series. I'm not doing it to Zach Thornton. Can't do it to him. Not doing it to Craig Kimbrell. I think it's Nolan McClain. Hoff, do you agree with that? I don't know if you're available to speak. Pete has done a great job of not just producing the Carton Show, but then driving home, setting up the Rico Bronya, doing it all. So I don't know if you're available to speak, but do you agree that Nolan McClain is the guy that should be the net negative?
Yeah, it's simple. It's definitely Nolan McClain. He's definitely the net negative. And I think you nailed it with Bo Bichette as the man right now. But Nolan McClain crapped the bet. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, here's the thing about Nolan McClain. We all love him. He's got a great future here. Go out there now and go win the Rico on the Man right now in the next series. Not the next series, the series after that, because he won't pitch probably until the Cincinnati series. But go back to being the dominant guy. He had a bad start. Doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but we'll make it official. Nolan McClain, you are the net negative. And Bo Bichette, you are the man right now. This Miami series. I don't love Jonah Tong making a start. I just don't think he's ready. He has struggled at AAA. Even as a one-off, it does concern me on some level. And a part of me leans towards calling up another reliever and just having a bullpen game. I mean, just telling Sean Manaea, you know what, Sean? We are going to allow you to start a game. Go get us 4 innings. Go figure out a way to fight through 4 innings. And then we'll use the guy we called up plus others to piece the rest of that game together. I know a lot of people may not agree with that, But I don't love the idea of Tong coming up here. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I eat my words. I hope he's great if he does make an appearance over the weekend. But it concerns me with the way he's pitched in the minor leagues. I think this three-game series, much like this final game of the four-game series against the Nationals, this is the swing game. This is the game that really determines if it was a good road trip or not. Go in 2 out of 3. Get this thing to 500 going into a homestand against Cincinnati and Miami. And really the way I view this season, as I give you a 50-game in season update, is I'm now looking to survive. I don't think this is a good team, but the beauty of baseball is that things can change. There is a world in which Francisco Lindor comes back and just changes the complexion of this lineup. There is a world in which Christian Scott starts to put everything together. He's got the tools. He's got the stuff. There's a world where Christian Scott emerges. And there's a world in which David Peterson, as much as I don't believe it, starts to pitch at least adequately better. And the Mets get to 500 by the All-Star break. And then the hope is the move is made as you get into the summer, whether it's acquiring somebody, whether it's getting healthier. And so I'm at a survival rate with this season, which is just survive. Don't let go of the rope. Don't go back to 10 games under 500. Get to 500 by the All-Star break. That's like my new conservative goal. And in the meantime, enjoy the youth. Like, there's a lot of young players on this team. There is a level of excitement when you watch young players. It doesn't mean I'm giving up on the season, or it doesn't mean my expectations have changed. It just means that's something else about this season that's intriguing. Watching the young players. AJ Ewing every day. Carson Bench every day. Christian Scott every 5 days. We'll see about Zach Thornton every 5 days. And maybe more. And hopefully Nick Morabito. Mendy, I know you listen to the Rico. Mendy, get Morabito in the lineup 2 out of 3 games over the weekend. Get it done. We will guarantee you a Rico after the Marlins series, though that will probably be a much later Rico Bronya on Sunday, Memorial Day Sunday, because believe it or not, Hoff and I are going to have cookouts and families, so that'll probably be a late night Rico Bronya. And you never know. Maybe we'll pop one in at some point on Memorial Day weekend. That's why you should subscribe to the Rico. You'll never miss an episode. And I say this all the time because I will get emails of people who say, hey, the Odyssey app didn't update. Or, hey, I didn't see an episode. We are machines with these Ricos. So if you don't see an episode for a couple of days, it's probably wherever you're downloading your podcast problem. It ain't us. So the backup plan I would always tell you is go to the WFAN YouTube page. That's where you can consume the Rico Bronya live, or you can watch the Rico Bronya. And you can also double check wherever you get your podcast to make sure, did I miss one? Because you probably did. Because we pop these things out like whatever pops out. I can't think of a good analogy. So there you go. Split happens, as they say, and the Mets got a split against the Washington Nationals. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on this somewhat happy edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.